All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am discussing the Falcons signing free agent guard Brandon Fusco and possibly their bidding farewell to several role players on their roster.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet, and also the host of this illustrious podcast, Locked on Falcons. You can find me tweeting up my takes on the Falcons and more on FalFans on Twitter, FalCFans. In today's episode, we are giving you sort of my rapid reaction to the Falcons signing of Brandon Fusco. We talked about on yesterday's episode that the Falcons would probably make a move on this opening day of free agency on Wednesday. Now that I'm recording this Wednesday evening, that no one saw coming, and we nailed it. Been off on a lot of predictions this offseason, but that one has been pretty consistent, and Fusco's definitely takes the cake. But before we get into Brandon Fusco, I do want to chat a little bit about the news that the Falcons did not extend tenders to restricted free agents Terron Ward, Nick Williams, as well as exclusive rights free agent safety Sherrod Neesman. Now, I don't think Williams was a surprise at all in that case, but Ward was. Well, not a huge, huge surprise. I did think it was likely that the Falcons would not tender Ward at the original pick level that I explained on yesterday's podcast, which would have cost them $1.9 million against their cap this year, but instead they would probably offer him a one-year or two-year contract worth slightly more than the veteran minimum to sort of bring him back in the fold and ultimately save, you know, over $1 million in their salary cap. I figured they might do the same thing with Nick Williams, but I thought that was almost a lock for that to happen. But with Ward, there was still a chance that they might extend a tender with him. And so the question, I guess, with Ward is going to be the fact that he did not sign that, presumably that offer that I'm assuming that the Falcons gave to him. Maybe they didn't give that offer. And so that's having me a little question. And whether or not the Falcons are prepared to move on from Terron Ward, my suspicion is the Falcons offered that contract. And because Ward, you know, figured maybe I can get a little bit more in free agency, he's going to test the market a little bit and see what else is out there. And if nothing else is out there, no other team is willing to bite for presumably, you know, 2 years, $1.5 million or whatever that contract offer might be on the table for the Falcons, he'll come back to Atlanta and be more than willing to accept that offer. So we'll see what happens with that. But if the Falcons have decided to move on completely from Terron Ward, I do question that move a little bit, not in the sense that I know a lot of people look at Terron Ward and say, hey, he's got a low ceiling, we can get a better player. But I think the thing that people continue to underestimate with Terron Ward is, yeah, he does have a low ceiling, no doubt about that. You're not going to be looking at Terron Ward as going to be the 1-2 punch in a high-level offensive attack like we have with Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. But he does have a very high floor. And he proved that last summer by, you know, handily beating out Brian Hill, who was a guy as a rookie, didn't necessarily have a high floor coming into Atlanta, but did certainly have a high ceiling in terms of his upside to be an impact player. And I do wonder a little bit if the Falcons do decide to move on from Terron Ward and do wind up, you know, focusing on trying to get a young player running back in the draft, will they fall into that same trap of getting a high upside guy that could wind up replacing Tevin Coleman, you know, down the road, or Devontae Freeman down the road, but a guy that's not going to really contribute in a lot of ways immediately in 2018 because of the loss of Terron Ward. So that is something that we'll have to see. We'll find out, I guess, over the next day or two if Terron Ward gets some nibbles out there or he's back in the fold in Atlanta. We'll find out. Again, Williams is no surprise. I do think there's a chance that the Falcons do bring him back later on because the Falcons love them some Nick Williams, but certainly him not being tendered I thought was expected. Neesman was surprising in a lot of ways. And, you know, the issue with Neesman, unlike the cases when the restricted free agents, you can't really save any money by, you know, not offering a tender to the exclusive rights free agents that have 2 years or less. Basically, that would have been the veteran minimum in Neesman's case. I think that's a $630,000 contract. And that's basically all you could do. And So you're not really saving any money by not keeping him, and you're opening up a hole, as far as you know, at the backup strong safety position. And so one wonders, unlike Teron Ward, who you can make a case is probably going to come back, if the Falcons don't tender Neesman, that probably means they're ready to move on from him, and he's probably not going to come back. And the Falcons are going to try to replace him, presumably, either in free agency or the draft. I would wager the draft, just because, again, Neesman is as cheap as they would possibly come as far as a competent backup strong safety. And any free agent you go out and get is going to be probably a lot more expensive than he would be. You only save money in the draft, and you probably wind up only saving about $100,000 in terms of cap space, if we're being honest. So it'll be interesting to see where the Falcons go with this position. I do question this move a little bit. It kind of reminds me of the whole last year where we – or 2 years ago, I guess it was, where we let Paul Warlow – we kept Paul Warlow by tendering him, and we let Nate Stupar walk. Obviously, there's no sort of Paul Warlow analog in this, but I guess if there is one, it's Ben Garland. And we talked about this on yesterday's episode – where they tendered Ben Garland at that second round level as opposed to the original pick level, and they lost $1 million. And now it seems like on the back end, they might be pinching pennies a little bit to make up for the fact that they gave Ben Garland an extra million that they probably didn't need to. And that's what I sort of mean with the Warlow-Stupar thing, where they tendered Warlow at that high level, and then they were tried to pinch pennies on Stupar, and they basically lost a pretty good player, pretty good role player in Stupar to New Orleans. Just because they weren't willing to play a little bit more harder ball with a player like Warlow. So that's the comparison I'm making with the Garland Neesman thing. So we'll see what happens. You know, I guess I got to start scouting strong safeties now. You know, I thought this offseason I'd be able to mostly skip over the running back, tight end, edge, and safety positions, but apparently the Falcons are forcing my hand to have to start evaluating some day three prospects at those positions that I didn't think I would need to. And this is one of the reasons why I always try to wait until after free agency to take a deeper dive into the draft, because things tend to change. So let's get into the Fusco signing. Fusco. But before we do, I want to remind you guys to check out Locked On NFL Draft. Hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema are doing their own March Madness bracket, looking at the top 32 prospects, having those guys go head-to-head to whittle it down to who's going to be the final four and who's going to be reigning supreme as far as the best prospect in this 2018 draft class. So go ahead, check out that podcast. Again, Locked On NFL Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So the Falcons signed Brandon Fusco to a three-year contract worth $12.75 million. They get a veteran starting guard that has started 80 games over his roughly 6-7 year career. He entered the league back in 2011, so I guess 7 year. Now he's entering year 8 of his career. Has dealt with some injuries. Before we get into sort of the Brandon Fusco, the broad strokes of Brandon Fusco, I should let you guys know that we're going to do not so much a deep dive on Brandon Fusco and what he is as a player. I did watch a couple of games of his in my preparation for the free agent class, and basically was one of the reasons why I concluded that this was not a strong free agent guard group, that I didn't think the Falcons would necessarily find the clear-cut Wes Schweitzer upgrade in this draft class, and that included guys like Fusco, who I thought was better than Schweitzer, but not by a huge, huge degree, and I'll get into that later. But I want to say that because what I'm going to probably wind up doing on Thursday evening, the night that you guys are listening to this, I will probably spend an hour or so really going through his tape to get more of a detailed analysis so that I can come back, whether that's on Friday or next week, and give you a much more deeper breakdown of what Fusco is going to potentially bring to the table rather than sort of what I have now, which is more broad strokes after watching one or two games of his, just to get an idea of where he is as a player. And I say that because, you know, I think one of the reasons why you guys like this podcast in particular is that I don't give opinions on players that I haven't watched before. And I have watched Fusco, but I do want to do a deeper analysis before I give you any strong takes. Meanwhile, you know, you can go on Twitter and find plenty of people giving you their opinions on why this is a great signing for the Falcons. And I can guarantee you those guys haven't seen a single snap of Brandon Fusco play in this league. So I say that, you know, stress some patience. I think this is a good signing for the Falcons. Let me be clear about that. But how strongly I feel that way will depend on doing a much deeper dive. And I do want to watch like four or five games. I want to go and look at his Pro Football Focus grades and say, okay, let me watch his two best games. Let me watch his two worst games. And then let me see him against like one intriguing matchup where he faces a high-end D-tackle and see how he handles that guy. And after watching those five games, then really have a much clearer picture of what he's bringing potentially to the table. And I know you won't get that type of analysis from other people elsewhere. And that's one of the reasons why you love the Locked On Falcons podcast. But that all being said, let's give you the broad strokes of what Fusco's bringing to the table. For those of you that know anything about this guy, he was a sixth-round pick of the Minnesota Vikings back in 2011. Wound up basically being their guy to help replace some of their older offensive guards, including Steve Hutchinson. His second year in the league in 2012, wound up starting at right guard, did not earn a particularly high grade that year, played poorly, but then saw a significant improvement the following year in 2013. So I'll throw out his Pro Football Focus grades just to give you some context. In 2012, he was graded as a 48.3. In 2013, he was graded as an 84.7, I'm sorry. And to give you further context, Lavitre's grade in 2016 from the Falcons was 83.1, and Schweitzer's grade this past year was 43.7. So basically, you could say from 2012 to 2013, Fusco went from a Wes Schweitzer caliber player to an Andy Lavitre caliber player. And that was one of the reasons why, starting at the beginning of the 2014 season, the Vikings gave him a contract extension. Unfortunately, he got hurt in the third game of that season, injured his shoulder, injured his pec, had an upper arm injury, and missed the rest of the season. Came back in 2015, and they moved him to left guard. Because at that point, the Vikings were shuffling their roster, their offensive line, and basically decided to go with the mentality, let's get the best five guys on the field at the same time, and we'll figure out, you know, who plays each position. And that year at left guard, coming off that injury, Fusco really struggled at left guard. And he wound up earning a Pro Football Focus grade of 44.6 that year, played all but one snap for the Vikings, gave up four sacks, nine hits, and 42 hurries for a total of 55 pressures that year. Again, for reference, this past season, when you combine, based off of the Pro Football Focus metrics, what Schweitzer and Lavitre did this past season, they gave up eight sacks, seven hits, and 32 hurries for a total of 47 pressures. So those two guys combined this past season were more productive overall when you look at the total pressures than what Fusco was in that 2015 season at left guard. But the Vikings moved him back to right guard in 2016. He rebounded with a better season. His Pro Football Focus grade didn't improve by a huge degree, but he did wind up giving up a lot less pressures, gave up four sacks, six hits, 24 hurries for a total of 34 pressures instead of the 55 he gave up the year before at left guard. But for the most part, in his course of those last couple of years in Minnesota, he was a bottom-tier guard in 2015 and 2016. And as you guys can, many of you can recall, the Vikings' offensive line was pretty horrendous in those two seasons. So they basically blew things up after the 2016 season, cut Fusco. He wound up landing with the 49ers. They plugged him in at right guard. He was pretty solid for them. Finished with a 76 Pro Football Focus grade, which is about the same grade that Lavitre earned this past season. Lavitre had a 78 grade. In this past season, Fusco gave up five sacks, three hits, and 21 hurries. So you still see a pretty high level of sacks that he allows relative to the guard play, the guard position, but he's done a much better job at preventing those pressures. So it's kind of like what Lavitre was in 2016, which was a player that gave up a bunch of sacks, because I think Lavitre gave like five or six sacks in 2016, but not a lot of pressure. So when he got beat, it often resulted in sacks, but not necessarily getting beat consistently. The good thing that Fusco did this past season in San Francisco, he played in an outside zone scheme that Shanahan cooks up. You know, I don't think the 49ers offensive line was great. I didn't look at Fusco in the games that I watched and saw a great fit in that scheme, like I saw with a guy like Spencer Long, who's a guy I've mentioned a couple of times as a guy that I really liked as a free agent. But I think Fusco did a good enough job that you could imagine with another year in his belt playing in that scheme, he would show significant improvement. The Vikings, I think they did some outside zone stuff, but I think they really sort of more moved to an outside zone scheme more in the last year or so than they were prior to that, and they were more like an inside zone man sort of scheme type of blocking. I think that's sort of where Fusco succeeds. I think the one area that really stood out to me in his game was that he's not great blocking on the second level. And as you guys recall, that was one of the bigger criticisms I had of Wes Schweitzer, that he was inconsistent hitting those second level blocks, which, you know, was the strength of Chris Chester's game, is arguably the strength of Alex Mack's game, as well as Andy Levitre, and one of the reasons why the running game clicked so well in 2016, because those guys are able to nail those second-level blocks in spring, Coleman and Freeman, for those longer runs. And if you guys recall when we did the roster review for the running back position, we talked about one of the differences from 2016 to 2017 and why the running game wasn't as effective is because the Falcons didn't break as many long runs in 2017 as they did in 2016. I think you can certainly say that Fusco is an upgrade. I think the benefit that Fusco has that Schweitzer doesn't have is that Fusco has that experience. And one of the reasons why I haven't been as down on Schweitzer as other people have been is because I recognize that it takes basically 3 to 5 years for offensive linemen to really sort of hit their stride. And Schweitzer's only at the beginning of that. And I think the flashes he showed, particularly against teams like Buffalo and Miami, when he was facing guys like Sue and Kyle Williams, I think were promising enough for me to think that he deserves another shot. But I'm not going to certainly complain about the Falcons trying to upgrade that position. I do think in the back half of the season, particularly after that Seattle game, that Schweitzer's play became a lot more erratic. And I think the main difference between you'll probably see between Schweitzer and Fusco, I think you could probably go and look at the film and find like 50 plays of Schweitzer where he looks awful. And then I think you could probably also find like 50 plays where he looks really good, but because he's not pancaking dudes, those aren't going to be highlight reel sorts of plays. And I think the thing with Fusco is you're probably going to be able to find like 20 really bad plays from him. But you can also probably find 50 good plays, and probably a few more of those will be sort of highlight reel plays where he's doing a really good job creating lanes and sealing alleys and doing all those sorts of things. So I think you're going to get a lot more consistent play from Fusco than you got from Schweitzer. But I think in terms of the high highs, I think you'll have less low lows and probably a few more higher highs. That's basically how I feel. But again, one of the things that I will certainly check out when I go back and do a much more detailed dive of Fusco's film. I will definitely check that out, and maybe I'll change my mind. So let's get into the specifics of Fusco's contract and what this move potentially means for the offensive line and the future of this offensive line. But first, I want to remind you guys to go check out Locked On NFL podcast with Matt Williamson. I know there's been a lot of moves going on around the league, and if you want to catch up the latest on what's happening in free agency for all 32 teams, 31 others, not just the Falcons, then you can definitely check out Locked On NFL podcast with Matt Williamson, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So we know the details of Fusco's contract. It's a 3-year, $12.75 million deal. But in essence, when you look at the structure of it, it's really a 2-year, $8.5 million deal. He got $5.5 million guaranteed. His first year base salary is fully guaranteed at signing. And part of his 2019 base salary, which is worth $4 million, is guaranteed for injury at signing. And that becomes fully guaranteed on the fifth day of the 2019 league year. So sometime next year in mid-March. Now, what that means for those of you that don't understand contracts is basically, let's say Fusco starts this year and he gets hurt and, you know, he has another injury, a season ending injury. And so the point is, similar to what happened to Levitre this year, let's say he has the same situation that Levitre has. And the way that happens is what happens when he gets to March, when the league year starts, he's not going to be able to pass a physical. And what happens when that occurs, then his contract becomes fully guaranteed. Right? Or not fully guaranteed. It becomes guaranteed for injury. So that means the Falcons can't cut him. Right? Now, the opposite of what happens is if Fusco goes through the season, doesn't get hurt, is healthy going into 2019, if he's awful, the Falcons can get out of the contract before his 2019 salary guarantees, because he can pass a physical and his contract isn't guaranteed for injury as long as they cut him before the fifth day of the league year in 2019. So if he's healthy and is terrible, the Falcons can get out of the contract after 1 year. If he's unhealthy and whatever, the Falcons can't get out of it until 2019. And assuming that he's the option C, which I think is the ideal option for many of us, is that he's healthy and plays well, then the Falcons will have no problem bringing him back for 2019. So the contract gives the Falcons some flexibility that if they need to, if they feel compelled to, they can get out of the deal after 1 year. But in all likelihood, this deal is designed for Fusco to play 2 years in Atlanta, at least 2 years, if not 3 years, as their starting right guard. And I think the key to that is that gives them some flexibility that hopefully that will stabilize one of those guard spots for 2019. Because again, one of the things that we talked about with LaVitri getting his contract redid, and which was surprised me at the time because I thought it was going to be differently, is the Falcons didn't add any years to LaVitri's contract. So LaVitri is going to be a free agent after the season, and he'll be, 32, 33 years old. He may retire. The Falcons may decide to move on. But whatever the case may be, the Falcons should, presumably, assuming Fusco lives up to expectations this year, the Falcons should only be looking to replace one starting guard after this season, and that's going to be LaVitri's spot. And more than likely, that's going to be Wes Schweitzer. That would be my bet at this time, that the Falcons are penciling in Wes Schweitzer to be that left guard of the future. Maybe it's Sean Harlow. Who knows? We'll have to see what happens this summer, how much growth Harlow shows, how much development Schweitzer shows. How well does Fusco play this year? How well does LaVitri play this year? Remember, LaVitri has gotten better every single season that he's been a Falcon. And so the interesting thing is, if he has another really strong year in 2018 and hits free agency, the Falcons may decide, you know what, Andy LaVitri, you're doing great for us. Let's just give you another 1 or 2 year contract and let's just see how long this lasts and just push punt trying to replace you until 2020 or whenever the case may be. So that's also a possibility. And that's one of the reasons why sitting here trying to predict the future, it's difficult to happen because it all really depends on what happens between August and January, hopefully February in the Falcons case. So that is basically what the Falcons are looking at. And so I think this leads us to where I want to wrap up this podcast by talking about the future of this offensive line. I think this is one of the reasons why it's even more important for the Falcons to really secure Jake Matthews. We saw Nate Solder get this monster deal from the New York Giants today, which was averaging $15.5 million a year. It was a 4-year contract. The expectation, I think, for a lot of us was that Jake Matthews would wind up signing an extension this summer or this spring that was worth somewhere between $12.5 to $13 million. But now with Solder pushing the market to even further extent, that number may rise up to $16 million a year. But the truth of the matter is the Falcons kind of are forced to pay it, because when you look at this Falcons offensive line with Fusco, with LaVitri, with Mack, and with Schrader, all four of those guys are going to be 30 years or older when opening day starts. And the truth of the matter is all four of those guys, there's a good chance that based off of Fusco's contract, based off of LaVitri being a free agent after this year, based off of Mack's age, as well as Schrader's contract, where the Falcons could get out of Schrader's contract next year if they so chose to. I don't think they will at this point, but I do think there's probably, you're looking at maybe after this season, maybe one, probably only one more year of Schrader starting for this team. Maybe further, again, who knows how he performs over the next couple of years. But the point I'm trying to make is, you have four starters on this team where, looking at them, probably you're going to have to replace at least all of them within the next 2 to 3 years. LaVitri next year, Fusco in 2 years, Mack maybe in 2 years. Who knows when Mack's going to retire? I assume the Falcons will let Mack play until he's willing and able to let it go. And we'll see about Schrader and his contract. But you have a situation where you have four of your starters are probably going to have to be replaced over the next two to three off seasons. And Jake Matthews, that means that the reason to let go of Jake Matthews only now means that you'd have to replace five of your starters. And the truth of the matter is, Jake Matthews, if you decided not to give him an extension this year because you're worried about pinching pennies, there's almost a guaranteed fact that the Falcons' number one pick next year is going to have to be a left tackle. Because when you look at recent history, good left tackles don't get taken typically after pick 20 in the first round. And if we're being honest, we're all hoping that the Falcons aren't picking in the top 20 in next year's draft. So in truth of the matter, your best hope for replacing Jake Matthews is hoping that a DJ Humphries type of player falls into the late first round. And even then, that's probably a downgrade because DJ Humphries is not as good as Jake Matthews is, and he's now entering, what, year three or four of his career. And so it's one of those situations where practicality basically makes, even if you have to overpay Jake Matthews, you kind of have to do it because the way that, how, given the declining, the increasing ages of the Falcons, and the fact that some of these guys may start to decline now that they're on the wrong side of 30, the Falcons can't afford to now have to be in a position to replace five starters. Now, the hope is that for the four open spots that the Falcons are going to have to replace probably by the time we get to 2020 or 2021, you can hope that Schweitzer is going to fill one of those spots, particularly at left guard with Lavitre. Maybe Sean Harlow, maybe he gets more work at center this offseason, in this summer. And I think that makes a lot of sense from his perspective, because now that the Falcons have added Fusco, Sean Harlow needs to prove that he can show a little bit more versatility. And with Garland being a free agent next year, because he's only signed to a one-year contract, it makes perfect sense if, okay, Garland's also on the wrong side of 30. So Garland hits free agency next year, and the Falcons say, okay, Ben Garland, we thank you for your service. We appreciate what you've done the last couple of years. You've been a solid reserve role player for us. But now it's time to turn the keys over to a young guy like Sean Harlow, who can fill your role as a dual center slash guard type of player. I think that's what the Falcons ideally want to see happen. And so I think there's a good chance that we see a lot more reps of Sean Harlow playing that center position this summer and this spring, as well as OTAs. That makes a lot of sense from my perspective. Fusco, who knows? But I do think there's probably a good chance that whether it's trying to replace that long-term center heir apparent at, for Alex Mack at center, or trying to replace Fusco come 2020 or whenever, you're probably going to see another high pick for the Falcons at the interior offensive line position. I'll explain a little bit later why I don't think that's going to happen this April, but we'll see. And then you have right tackle, where, no, I don't think Ty Sambrelo is an option. I don't really think Austin Pastore is really an option at this point, unless he comes out and balls this summer and this season. Maybe Daniel Brunskill. I think Brunskill is right now probably destined to be a practice squad player. He'll be my dark horse to possibly win that swing tackle position, but it's probably a long shot at this point. But maybe if you stash him for another year on the practice squad, and by the time he's entering his third year, which was, I think, the same time that before Ryan Schrader became a permanent starter for the Falcons. So maybe the Falcons strike lightning twice, or lightning strikes twice with the Falcons, and they hit on Brunskill like they did with Schrader. Who knows? It's possible, but probably not likely. I mean, if that's the case, then you've taken care of maybe three out of those four spots that you need to replace long term. But if we're being honest, if we're being realistic, you're probably, your best case is probably only one of those four spots to be replaced by any of those guys I just mentioned. So we will see the Falcons probably investing in their offensive line in future drafts, but I think this Fusco signing really helps them, basically prevents them from having to take that player now. I do think when you look at their roster, if you're projecting how this roster will probably look when we get to training camp, assuming that they do not draft a player, I think they have 9 or 10 guys already that they should be reasonably comfortable with. You have your five starters: Matthews, Lavitre, Mack, Fusco, and Schrader. Those guys are going to start for you. You have your top two backups that are locks to make the team. That's going to be Schweitzer and Garland. Most likely Garland's going to be the sixth guy that's going to be active on game day. So you might see another year where Schweitzer is inactive. I want to give you guys a warning now. Don't panic about that. Hashtag inactive analysis. All these people that don't watch any Falcons football but will give you in-depth insights in how the coaching staff is thinking based off of, you know, who's inactive on each week. That baffles me. All that stuff is based purely off of who's healthy and who's not. You can only activate 46 players, and sometimes you got to sit some guys because you have injuries at other positions. But, you know, some people will let you know, oh, Schweitzer's inactive for 14 games this year. Oh, no, the Falcons are out on him. It's like, oh, my God, guys, you make me want to pull my hair out, what little hair I have. So I think Garland and Schweitzer are locks to make the team. I think between Pastor and Sam Brailo, you probably have one guy being the swing tackle. And then I think Harlow probably sticks as that last guy, that ninth offensive lineman, so that the Falcons can stash him for future as a developmental center or guard. But again, all that sort of depends between Sam Brailo, Pastor, and Harlow. I think those three guys are probably competing for two, maybe three spots, probably two. So the best two guys will make it. So there's a chance that Harlow, that's one of the reasons why on yesterday's episode I said, I don't think Harlow's a lock to make the team. There's a chance he could be cut if both Sam Brailo and Pastor in some world weird reality both come out and ball this summer. You know how I think one of those guys probably won't be that guy, but I'll save that hatred for another day. We'll see about that. Brunskill's a long shot. Jahmyr Douglas is, at this point, is probably a camp body. And that's one of the reasons why I don't expect the Falcons to take a guard. We got a question from Vienna Falcons. He asked me, you'd been on board to get Sitton as a bridge and Isaiah Wynn as a post-Lavitre future, and I love the plan as well. What changes when you go from Sitton to Fusco? Why is Wynn so unlikely now? I think he'll still be in play if no defensive tackle jumps out at 26. And I agree with you. I think the thing when I said that, I tweeted that like back in February, was I said I was daydreaming about that. And so I think that was my indicator that I didn't really think that scenario. And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, I probably should give you some context. I tweeted out that I was daydreaming about Josh Sitton, the Falcons signing Josh Sitton if and when he's cut by the Bears, because this was before he actually got cut by the Bears, and they still draft Isaiah Wynn. And so Isaiah Wynn and Schweitzer can wind up learning behind Lavitre and Sitton for a year from two of the better guards, two of the better veteran guards, and that will help their development. And I was daydreaming about that scenario. And so the point, now I'm saying that, oh, I don't think the Falcons are going to draft a guard now. And so what Vienna is asking me, Marco, is asking me, is what has changed now that we've signed Fusco. And the reason that has changed is because, A, when I said daydreaming, I was indicating that I didn't think that was a realistic scenario. I thought that was me daydreaming about this perfect scenario that would be awesome. But because I'm daydreaming about it, I don't think it's a realistic, plausible scenario that the Falcons would certainly undertake. So that's my real reasoning why I don't think it's that plausible. But at the same time, I think the difference is because Sitton is 2 years older than Fusco, if the Falcons did sign Sitton to play that right guard spot, you would only be looking at Sitton as a one-year fix for the situation. And so then with Lavitre only having 1 year left in his contract, you would still need two starting guards. Maybe Schweitzer's one of them, but you would need to add another guard. And so it would still make sense in that case to take a guy like Wynn with the idea of planning for 2019 ahead. But with Fusco's deal basically being a two-year contract, I don't feel like the Falcons need to feel as compelled to get one of their 2019 starting guards in 2018, if you understand what I'm saying. So that's my answer to that, Marco. It's a subtle difference. Again, most of it was just me being very unrealistic with my daydreaming scenarios. I like to daydream about epic futures for the Falcons, and then reality shows up and smacks me in the face, and that doesn't happen. But, generally the Falcons do a good job. So those are my thoughts on the impact of Fusco and what it means for the future. This is certainly going to be a topic that we're going to continue to talk about, particularly when we get to the draft, because we may come and find out that the Falcons are still working out these first and second round guards. I do think a guard is still a possibility, but I think it has to be a player that they absolutely love, being at a pick where they don't have other needs and other players that they like at other need positions. And it's just like in the case, like, okay, it is a guy like Isaiah Wynn falling to 26, and the D tackle that the Falcons probably want isn't there, or it's a guy like Austin Corbett from Nevada who maybe the Falcons have a top 50 grade on and hope, and originally we thought we might take him at the end of the round two, but he falls, like we saw with guys like Dan Feeney last year, he falls to the end of round three, and he's sitting there at pick 90 when the Falcons are on the board, and they're just sitting there like, okay, we don't love a D tackle or a wide receiver or whatever, or a tight end or whatever that we might wind up picking, and we'll pull the trigger on a guy like Corbett because he's just so talented. But I think the problem with that is if you draft a guard high in this draft, you're essentially pushing Harlow out the door, because then all of a sudden Harlow becomes a lot more expensive and you basically wasted a pick. And then again, if you wait until like day three of the draft, you're probably not drafting a guy that you think is better than Harlow, and so you're kind of wasting a pick. The only real reason I think the Falcons could get away with drafting an offensive lineman is if they drafted an offensive tackle to throw into the mix with Sambrelo, with Pastore, with Brunskill to compete for that swing tackle position. But the problem with drafting an offensive tackle, and again, one of the reasons why I was advocating for the Falcons to draft an offensive tackle earlier this offseason was at a time when I thought it's either Sambrelo or nothing at all competing for that swing tackle position. And in that situation, I was very much in favor of the Falcons drafting an offensive tackle. But now that Pastore's back, it's not as a pressing issue to me, because the problem with drafting offensive tackle, because this is what we talked about with Jake Matthews earlier, which is the premium is so high at the position that any really good offensive tackle is going to be a top 15, top 20 pick, right? And so what ends up happening is the guys that go in late round one and round two are just okay tackle prospects. It's very similar to the quarterback position, where good quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10 picks, top 12 picks. If you're not good, then what happens is you're really a second or third or fourth round talent that gets pushed up into the end of the first round, or gets pushed up into the beginning part of the second round, and you're not really worth that pick. And often that's one of the reasons why, if you're not taking a quarterback in the first 11 or 12 picks, typically those guys don't turn into viable starters. They're just long-term backups. And it's the same way with offensive tackle. There aren't a lot of success stories, at least recently. You have some Teron Armsteads, you have some David Bakhtiaris, you have some Cordy Glenns, etc., and certainly a number of right tackles that have been successful in the league that were not high picks. But recently, it is not as much the case. And that's because, for a lot of factors, that's because offensive line play is not as good in college. And so the pipeline that used to exist, where you could get really good players throughout the entire, all 3 days of the draft, doesn't really exist anymore to the same level that it once did, so that you could wait on offensive linemen and say, oh yeah, we can take a third or fourth round guard or a third or fourth round tackle and get a potential future starter. That's not really the case anymore. And so what ends up happening is, by the time nowadays, when you get into the middle or late part of the third round, you're drafting projects. You're drafting guys like Antonio Garcia, LaRaven Clark, Chaz Green, and dare I say, Lamar Holmes. You're drafting these guys in the latter part of the third round that are pure projects, guys that are not going to come in and contribute right away. And so basically, in that situation, if the Falcons don't use their first or second round pick on an offensive tackle, which I don't think anybody here is advocating, right, you're going to wind up drafting a guy in the third, fourth, fifth, or whenever round that's just basically going to be a redshirt year. And the only reason you're keeping him is so that maybe in 2019 he could be a viable candidate to compete for that swing tackle spot. But he's, at this point, he's just a body that you're just basically decided, we're going to redshirt this guy. He's not going to play anyway. And again, in the scenario where it was just Sambrelo coming back, that was a worthwhile option to me, because it's better than nothing. But in the scenario where it's Sambrelo and Pastore, I don't know if that's really a viable option for the Falcons, at least in my mind. So I think the Falcons can now afford, with the addition of Fusco, to punt on the offensive line in this year's draft. If a really good player slides to them at any point in the draft, I'm not going to sit here and say, don't do it, don't draft them. But I do think this now puts them in a position where they don't have to draft an offensive lineman, and they can focus on needs at other positions, particularly in the front seven, in the secondary, adding depth there, tight end, running back, wide receiver now, skill positions. And so I think the Falcons can punt on their offensive line needs in the draft until 2019, which I think, sitting here today, it's very likely that one of their early picks will be an offensive lineman then, but we'll have to see how that scenario plays out. So that's it, guys. I appreciate you guys listening. If the Falcons make another move today on Thursday, we thought there might be a tight end signing. Who knows? Ed Dixon's out gallivanting in Seattle. Austin Seferi-Jenkins is on his way to Jacksonville. As I mentioned on yesterday's episode, there's a bunch of other old blocking tight ends that are potentially available, so I don't think the Falcons have to rush to get that move. But if they do want to go out and get a veteran tight end, and maybe that happens in the next 24 hours or whenever, I might be back I will be back on Friday to do something. We'll talk about something. I don't know what it's going to be, but maybe it's a Falcons free agent move. So we'll be back to talk about something Falcons related, draft related, free agency related, whatever the case may be. Maybe we look at what the rest of the NFC South is doing. Who knows? We'll figure it out. But you guys stay tuned. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with me and provide your feedback, you could do so on Twitter. I'm @FalFans on Twitter. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. That's the easiest way to get your podcast related content and feedback to me on Twitter. If you don't like Twitter, you don't have Twitter, you can use social media called Facebook. Ever heard of it? Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. If you don't like social media, you can use email. That's lockedonfalcons@mail.com, where you can send me any email. No character limits on that. You can also leave a comment at the two websites where this show is posted and hosted daily. That is lockedonfalcons.com as well as falcfans.com. I'm going to try to put up my free agency tracker on falcfans.com this weekend. I probably should have put it up, you know, the week the free agency started, but you know me, I procrastinate. I did promise you guys a mailbag, leftover mailbag. I will work on that. That will definitely be up. I guarantee it by Monday. I guarantee it. And you can also check out my most recent mock draft on Locked On Falcons, a 7-round mock with the Falcons. Had the Falcons taking a guard in the second round, Austin Corbett. Throw that out now. So that's what happens with free agency. It completely changes the landscape of the draft. Check out, I will probably do a 32-team first/second, maybe third-round mock, depending on how deep into the rabbit hole I fall this weekend. I'll work on that. I worked on one last weekend, and now that free agency has rolled around, I can make some modifications and adjustments and whatnot, and that'll be something I work on. So look for that early next week on falcfans.com, where I post those 32-team mock drafts as opposed to the Falcons-specific mock drafts on Locked On Falcons. So that's it, guys. Appreciate you guys listening. We will be back with more content on Brandon Fusco, any additional Falcon free agents that we sign. Maybe tomorrow's episode is going to be my deep dive on Fusco if I get the time to do it, to look at the film tonight. So we'll see. And until then, guys, you guys stay locked on. I appreciate you guys listening. And certainly we will be back tomorrow.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.